I'm John Henry. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, John.
Sober again today. Guy named Bob Colberty. I hadn't seen him in 45 years. He called me the other day. Because that Facebook thing, you know, I mean, people who know people who know people who know people can get a hold of you. Now, last time I saw him, rumor had it he'd gone through a toll booth. No, he'd gone through a toll booth. And he had a lady that was riding with him that was a professional woman. And they were all quite loaded, and the police started chasing him. And she stuck her head out the window and started yelling, "Pig, pig, pig." Now, Coberly was in a tight. But a wino loves a story. I love a story. I mean, I'd heard about Coberly doing this, and I was living on this goat farm on the Port Madison Indian Reservation. And I called, Coberly was a running buddy of mine. He's a running buddy. You know what they are. That's that person that you call them on the phone and say, "Let's go get us a bottle of," and they say yes before you finish the sentence. "Let's go get us a handful of okay." let's grab your car. We'll get us an okay. That's a running buddy. So I called Coberly on the phone. I wanted to hear this story. Winos love us. I love a story, you know. And I want to hear him tell this story. It was renowned among my friends. So I called him on the phone and said, "Coberly, I hear you, went through a toll booth," and there was a silence that was kind of not like Bob. I said, "Come on over here to the goat farm." I said, "I got myself enough money for a bottle of Mad Dog 2020. I got a little bag of reefer. We're gonna tell it right." And there was a silence that was uncomfortable for me because he always would say, "Yeah, isn't that right? Isn't that what a running buddy does? Isn't that the contract we have? Yeah, with them people we're running with. Yeah." Coberly didn't say yeah. He said nothing. I said, Coberly, it's me. I went by the name Jake back then. I said, "It's Jake. Come on over here to the goat farm. I'll buy us a bottle of Mad Dog 2020 and we'll get right." He said, "Well, okay." That's wrong the way he said that. But he came on over. And we walked down to a place called the TP Tavern on the Port Madison Indian Reservation. You know, I got a bottle of Mad Dog. It was my last $5 I had. And we were walking back up toward the farm, and it was dark, as only can be dark in the country, and he started talking about having gone to rehab. "This is not the way I wanted this thing to go." And he said, "You know, you and me, we're potential alcoholics." And I thought, "Who's this we thing you got going on? What do you mean we?" He said, "No, you know, you and me, we're potential alcoholics." He said, "Well, we're addicted to alcohol, and this is not a good evening." And he grabs that bottle of Mad Dog, takes it out of my hand. He said, "Listen, if I took the top off," and he took the top off, "if I were to pour this out," and he went to pour that out, I snapped up at him and grabbed him. And there was a place in my gut. And he just said, "See? See?" I'll never forget that. I mean, I can recall that like it was yesterday. "See? Don't be pouring. Don't even pretend to pour my wine out on us. Don't do that." Now, as uncomfortable as that evening got, it got more uncomfortable because he'd been to rehab, and he said, "There's blackouts," and he started talking like that. Now, I don't recall the evening because there's blackouts, you know. It says in the 12 and 12, a book that I wouldn't read for many years. It says, "When it was then discovered that when one alcoholic planted in the mind of another alcoholic the true nature of his malady, of his disease, of his problem, that person could never be the same again." And that evening, he said, "We're potential alcoholics." He used that word. And I never forgot that. Never forgot that. I was sitting in the TP Tavern later on, several weeks, maybe a month later. I'm not so sure. It was... My arm had been broken in 17 different places. I was on Social Security disability income. I was fully disabled. And I was living in this old shack. And I was swapping food stamps for booze. Called them booze stamps back then. 50 cents on a dollar. I don't think that's changed. And I'm sitting there at the TP Tavern. TP Tavern, it opened up like at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like the grocery stores didn't open up till 10, but the taverns opened up till 7 on the reservation. And this guy walked into the tavern looking for a pack of cigarettes. Now, what I didn't know is this guy had not been in a tavern for 3.5 years. And he walked into a tavern like he knew how to walk into a tavern. He diddy-bopped into that tavern. And he walked over the jukebox, he put a quarter in that jukebox, and he played 3 songs for a quarter. Born to Lose, Your Cheating Heart, and Crying Time Again. Yeah. These are songs you don't learn in church, okay? You learn these songs because you've been alone. That's the only time you listen to those songs initially. I knew that guy was a drunk the same as I know any. A drunk knows a drunk. I know you're a drunk. I know you're a drunk. I know you're a drunk. You and I see each other. We know the deal. I mean, look at me. I'm like a banker. It takes you 2 minutes to figure out I'm no damn good. No. No. You look at me for about 5 minutes, you think, something's in there. And he's a liar, a cheat, and a thief, though I'm not sure how that works. Isn't that right? That's right. Well, this guy walked in, and he was clean throughout. He had red wing boots on. He had a down skin vest on. He was looking like he was clean. He was just clean. And he went to that jukebox. He went up to the pool table. He put a quarter in that pool table, and he racked those balls, and he ran around the table. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Run them all. Turned around, and looked at me, says, "You're John Henry, aren't you?" And I thought, he knows famous people. Don't we like that? I like that. I like that. I like being recognized. Even though I was busted out, I was fully disabled, my arm was a mess, I was stinking. I was putting booze on my tab. Always pay my tab. Always pay your tab. Isn't that a rule? That's a rule. Always pay your tab. Maybe behind on your rent, maybe behind on your child support, maybe behind on your taxes, but by God, that tab is, it's paid. He said, "Man, you're a musician, aren't you?" I said, "No, I'm just playing harmonica these days. I couldn't play my guitar anymore. My arm was broken. My hands didn't work as well." He said, "Why don't we go over to my house? My house. My house." I knew this man was a drunk. Now, when the people I was hanging out with, they weren't living in houses. Many of them were living like in cars and shit. And this guy said, "Let's come over to my house." And he says, "I'm right across the street." And he pointed to this house right across the street from the bar. That's that location. And there were some steps going up to it. It was on this cliff overlooking the Puget Sound. Just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. And he said, "Come on, man. Come on over." And he ran up these steps. Now, I wanted to impress this man. I wanted to impress this man because he was a drunk like me. So I did what you want to do to impress anybody that's drunk like me. I bought a bottle of 2020, you got it. You know, how long you known me? Yeah, 5 minutes. Bought a bottle of Mad Dog 2020. I bought a pint. It was $1.10 back then. And I took that pint and I stuck it in this Mackinac coat I was wearing, this old nasty Mackinac coat. And I went over to this guy's house. Now, when I went across, I thought, this guy's got a house. You know, he's a wino like me. This guy's busted the coat. And in front of that house, there was a 1954 Dodge Ram four-wheel drive, baby blue, and it said Barnett Construction on it. I thought, Jesus, this guy's got his own company. And inside his garage was a 1973 Bronco with the top off, brand new. I thought, Jesus, this guy's got a day car and a night car, too. And the doors were open, and he was playing with this bluegrass music coming out of that house. It was the group called The Seldom Seen, very, very tight, playing a song called Old and In the Way. It makes more sense to me now than it did then. But I walked up these stairs, and this house, it was tight, and it was pretty, and it was clean like he was tight and pretty and clean. And I walked inside this house, and there was a Vega banjo on one side and a Gibson guitar on the other. And he was playing, there was a Gerard turntable. He was playing this music, and the floors were hardwood, and there was a bookcase on either side of this fireplace. And there was a picture up there, and it wasn't his mother. Man, she was pretty. And I thought, this man has broke the code. Whatever this cat's doing, I'm going to pay attention to this cat. Now, he was making some coffee. I should have known. But he sat down, and we got to talking. I was very comfortable with this guy, like a drunk is comfortable with a drunk. And when the music died down, he started to tell a story. Now, a fairy tale starts like this, once upon a time. But a wino story starts like this. Now, this ain't no lie. No, it starts, I was all screwed up and this ain't no lie. And he started this story, I was all screwed up and this ain't no lie. And he went on. Now, and the rules are, if they start a story, you got to top it. Isn't that the rule? And then we were topping each other's stories. But the thing is, he was talking about being in jail, and you can't lie about being in jail. Uh-uh. If you know what the sound of the slammer is, you know what the sound of the slammer is. He'd been in nut houses. He'd been in jail. He'd been in bed with his wife when his girlfriend called. He talked about those kind of problems. And he snuck up on his car to see where the dents were. And he talked about what coming to and being terrified. And I know what coming to and being terrified about. And he talked about blacking out. He talked about sneaking up on his car and looking out the window and making see where it was. And he was telling these stories like I know. He's drunk like me. And every good drunk is about timing. So I pulled out that bottle of Mad Dog 2020 and I took the top off that pint. I threw that top away. You don't need a top on a pint. And I handed it to him. Do you? Uh-uh. I handed it to him and he said something changed my life. He said, no, thank you. I said, what do you mean, no, thank you? He said, well, when I drink, I get drunk. I said, yeah. He said, when I get drunk, I get in trouble. He said, when I get drunk, I get in trouble sometimes. And there was a big comma there. He said, I get in trouble sometimes. He didn't say he got in trouble all the time. That's bullshit. He said, I get in trouble sometimes. And I thought to myself, yeah, I get in trouble sometimes too. I'll start out, everything's fine. And then it's not so fine. Then he said something changed my life forever. He said, I'm an alcoholic. And I can remember thinking, why, you poor son of a bitch. Winos are like that. We look down on the little people, you know what I mean? But I was happy that I had that bottle all to myself. And that afternoon we talked and we went, I'm drinking this bottle of Mad Dog 2020. We're not talking about cordial here. We're talking about Mad Dog. Talking 18% by volume, and I'm sitting there swinging out of a bottle in this man's home, and he's comfortable with me sitting there. He shouldn't have been comfortable with me sitting there. He was a man with a business, a home, a couple cars, and we're telling stories and such, and I'm sucking on this bottle of death. We jumped inside his car, and he took me back to this old shack where I was squatting. He dropped me off. And he said, hey, man, you mind if I drop by every once in a while? I said, yeah, sure, come on by. What are we going to do, have tea? What? You're a contractor. You come from a good family. You got a couple of cars. You own a home. And you're going to drop by my shack? Right. Well, you know what? If they're AA members and they say, can I come by the house? They're going to come by the house. Every once in a while, and I'm talking every once in a while. Well, Gordon B., he dropped by the house. Got awful early in the morning, 10, 11 o'clock. He'd honk on that horn. He said, come on, man, let's go. And I'd come out of that house with a bottle of Mad Dog or whatever I was drinking, smoking cigarettes. And he'd be in that car. I said, you know, I'm going to smoke cigarettes and drink booze inside your car. He said, yeah, you are. Come on in this car. Come on in, jump in. Come on, jump in. What's that sound like? That sounds like AA to me. Come on in this house. No, come on in this house. But I'm trouble. Yeah, you are. Come on in this house. But I'm going to drink. Yeah, you got to. Come on in this house. But I'm going to smoke these cigarettes inside your car. Yeah, you are. Come on, let's go. And we drove around. And you know how often he talked about being an AA member? And you know how often he said he didn't drink? But I'd ask him stuff. Like one time I said, why don't you drink? And I was waiting for him to say, because I get in all this trouble and when times get bad, I got to have a drink. And I was ready to tell him, yeah, when times get bad, I got to have a drink. That's when I warm up. But he didn't say that. He said, well, I had to quit drinking because he said, I quit drinking because I was no longer willing to pay the price. I pay a different price than my sister does. My sister takes a drink. She takes a drink. I take a drink. I sign a contract. It's a different damn deal. Once I take a drink, I can no longer predict with any degree of certainty the outcome of that decision. Uh-uh. It's a different deal. Different deal for me. And I pay a price. The price I pay is not the $1.10 for the pint. The price I pay is that first drink. Turns into a second drink. Turns into a third drink. Turns into no job. Turns into a broken arm. Turns into no car. Turns into living on the squat. Turns into living on the streets. Turns into homelessness. Turns into stealing, lying, and cheating. Turns into a big, 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 big price that other people don't have to pay. Why the hell is that? He said he put a plug in the jug. He said, you know, back when I was drinking all the time, it was about 80% bad time and about 20% good. And I thought, shit, I wish I could get up to 20. But when I quit drinking, right away, it just turned itself around. About 80% good time, 20% bad. I can remember him saying that kind of stuff. You know, when we meet people, or at least when I've met people in my life that have an opinion, you know, they have an opinion. I want an opinion. They're powerful people. I thought he was powerful people. And I wanted to emulate him, you know, be like him. So I started telling people I was alcoholic. And you know what? It was no surprise to any of those people that I was talking to up and down that. I couldn't drive. I'd quit driving several years before then because they said, you can't drink and drive. I said, okay. Here we go. And I would hitchhike around and go to these taverns and tell people, I'm alcoholic. And they would say, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. December 24th, Christmas Eve. I'd been drinking all day, don't you? I mean, it's Christmas Eve. For God's sakes, I've been drinking all day. This is not a surprise. I've been over at Max foistering drinks one way or another. And these two buddies of mine, L.E. Morgan Jr. and a guy named Hat Rack Gallagher, harmonica player, they came by that old Max and said, come on, man, we're gonna drive you up to a place called the Marimont Cocktail Lounge. Now, I don't like cocktail lounges much because they got social drinkers in there. Make me very uncomfortable. But they said, well, come on up to the Marimont. We'll buy you two of anything you can order. So we went up there. I said, give me a triple scotch and a zombie chaser. I said, do it twice. That's 3 ounces. Yeah. That's 3 ounces of scotch. And whatever the hell a zombie is, it was layers of rum that was, they lit it on fire or something. It was. And I slammed one down like it was nothing. I followed it with that scotch and I can barely remember the second one. But I cleared the table and got into a fight and the police were coming and it's, you know, I was blacking in and blacking out and they drove me back to this house. And one of the guys gave me a Christmas present just to go and it was a half fifth of Johnny Walker Red, okay? And I took that and I started to consume that. Now, I was hysterical by this time. And there was this stove that was in this old shack and I got it cooking with coal and I started slamming my arm around because that's what you do when you're a kung fu expert. In it? Yeah, you've been a kung fu expert. I know that. So I broke this broken arm again. I woke up the next morning, December 25th of 1973, naked on this old pea-stained couch where I slept. And there I had a slouch hat on, and there was coal all over the damn place from this stove that I kicked over. I couldn't even do wrong right, I tell people. I couldn't even burn that place down. And there was somebody in that room. So I opened my eyes real slow. And there wasn't only somebody, there were three somebodies in that room. One of them had a suit on. Now, in those days, if you had a suit in my house, you were either from the laws or from the church. So I kind of wanted to figure out who this guy was. His name was L.E. Morgan Sr. He was a deacon from the Church of Christ. He was from the church. But his son, L.E. Morgan Jr., was that guy who bought me that drink the night before. He was a running buddy of mine. And there was a guy there that I didn't recognize, a guy named Uncle Bill Morgan. He was a Marine E-7 back from his second tour of Vietnam and not real happy about being in that shack with me on Christmas morning. He was kind of standing back waiting for me to do something stupid. The old man said it like this. He said, boy, get yourself up. He said, it's Christmas Day. We're a Church of Christ family. We're giving. And you, son, you are receiving. You're going to Christmas dinner with us. And he said, leave that jug behind. He said, leave that jug behind. My initial thought was to tell him what I thought about that idea, make him go away. I can make a Christian go away in most cases. But I looked over that Uncle Bill, that Marine. He wasn't smiling. And he was ready. So I said something a little bit different. I said, well, what a wonderful idea. Let's go to Christmas damn dinner. Leave that jug behind. We went over this. We went over this. Oh, God dang. This is suburbs, baby, on Bainbridge Island. The suburbs. This big, pretty little ranch house. There's Ma, there's Pa, there's Ted, there's Sally. There's Mitch Miller on the jukebox. That whole thing going on. The lights blinking and cards everywhere. And this big old table. And there's all these clean people, you know, and then me. I felt like a wine old bum in the middle of a Norman Rockwell print. You know, I just so damn odd. And they served up the turkey and they handed it over to me and it was like, let's not be doing that. I'm jonesing and they're giving me goddamn turkey. But somebody in that group gave me a big old glass of orange juice with a bunch of honey in it. So I started sucking on that, didn't they, Chris, in the old days. And that'll kind of keep you at bay. A lot of that sugar will keep you okay, keep you from getting too sick. That dinner lasted, 24, 25 hours as far as I was concerned. Shit, it just went on and on and on. Hark the hammer out, Jesus Christ. And they finished the dinner. I said, hey, thanks, lovely dinner. I got to run. Thanks for the orange juice. You know, I got things to do, people to see. I got to get drunk somehow. Right now, baby. And the old man looked at me and said, oh, no. So we're unwrapping gifts. Still my beating heart. We walked into this family room, and there must have been 20 people there, and there must have been two or three gifts for every one of those people there, and there was this tree, and there was a little girl, and she'd pick up a gift, and she'd go over and hand it to Uncle Joe, and that one gift went to that one man, and everybody would wait for that some bitch to unwrap that thing, you know. That's one, okay? We got like 49 more to go, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. And I'm in this easy chair, and the easy chair, I'm starting Jones, it's getting sweaty. And that tree is blinking, and I'm starting to blink. And I looked at that, there was an angel up there, and I thought, oh, fuck, I hope she doesn't talk to me. Worse, I hope to hell I don't say nothing back. You know, these are like the Church of Christ people. I don't know about y'all, but occasionally I feel like everybody's looking at me, even today, for some reason. But I felt like everybody was looking at me. Well, there was a reason everybody was looking at me. It's because they were. This little girl had a package, and she came walking over to me. She handed me this little old package and said to John Henry, you know, and I opened up the package, and I pulled out a keychain. And I thought to myself, well, fine, I don't have a key. I didn't have a car to start or a lock to lock. He said, what do you say? You know, keep your goddamn chain? No, I said, thank you very much. Well, keychain, golly. Yeah. Place for my key collection here, you know what I mean? I'm waiting to organize my key collection. But he took me home, that old man, and dropped me off of this shack and took off. I hadn't had a drink in over 7 hours. Where's the big book, Chris? You got one around here? Is there anything in here I shouldn't read? just asking, man. I'm just asking. Oh, well. I won't read out loud then. I hadn't had a drink in 14 hours. No, excuse me, about 7 hours. And I looked in this mirror in this nasty old shack, and there was this greasy-haired cat all bloaty and much, much, much bigger, nearly 200 pounds. And most of that was just sugar and wine, and my arm was broken in many different places. And I was very, very, very sick. And I looked in that mirror, and I thought to myself, nobody did this to you but you. And I said the word, I'm alcoholic. Like I'd been saying, only something happened. There was a sense of victory, followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. And I didn't believe in God. That night I slept like a baby. Now I'm an old meth head. And I hadn't slept in a long, long time. I'd passed out. And I came to. But that night, I went to sleep. And I woke up the next morning. I knew exactly what to do. I don't know where I got the instructions. I sense I know now. But back then, I got up and I walked to Gordon Barnett's house. And I put Gordon B., that guy with the coffee and the car that had been riding me around, this member of ANA, I walked to his house. And I put a sign on his door. I said, I think I have a drinking problem. I didn't sign it because I didn't want to put anything to permanent or nothing. I figured he'd know who the hell it was. Turn around and walk back. Now, I've gone over to that very place, and I've clocked that with my car, and it was 3 miles each way. My arm was broken in many, many places. It was flopping at my side like a rag. I was sick and jonesing. I walked 6 miles that day. When I came home, I sat down on a couch and waited. And I don't know if I waited 2 minutes or 2 days. I have no idea. But old Gordon Barnett, he showed up in that K5 Blazer. And I recall, when I think about that time, I remember the top being down and the sun shining and the birds singing. And it was December in Washington State, so that probably wasn't happening. But I'm sticking to my story. You understand what I'm saying? The way I recall. And we got inside that K5 Blazer. We went on to the ferry boat ride. And we headed on over to Seattle, Washington. Headed to a place called the Fremont Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bad, bad club. Tough. 24-hour club. You know what I'm talking about. You know where I know where you live. Same place I live. Yeah. Now, if they'd have taken me to a place like Northland, I'd have turned around and walked away after stealing something. But the Fremont Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was a tough damn place. And they were tough damn place. Fist fights inside, outside. It was raucous, baby. It was tough. And there was a Greek restaurant underneath it, and up there were these stairs going up to the top where the Fremont Fellowship was. And old Gordy said, "Come on, man, follow me." And he ran up the stairs. I thought he can go ahead and run if he wants. I wouldn't have run out of a burning building in those days. So he ran up the stairs. And I walked up those stairs, and they were numbered. Step one, step two, step three. I said, "Jesus, they can't even figure out how to go up the damn stairs." But the closer I got, the more I could smell the cigarettes and smell the coffee and hear the laughing like I'm hearing here. Like when I walk outside, I stood outside. I wasn't watching y'all smoke. I was listening to the inside. Cause I love to hear the inside of these AA clubs. I hear my winos laugh, and I love that. I love that. I love that. No. Did I say that? I love that. Because I'm hearing them say, "I lost my wife. Yeah. Lost my job. Oh yeah, man. Me too. You know, behind on my taxes. Yeah, man." These are people with hope. These are people who are laughing from their gut of guts. They were laughing from a place I hadn't heard in a long, long time, and I thought, man, listen to them laugh. It says in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I wouldn't read for several years, if you want what we have, if you want what we have, and you know what I want? I want that laugh, baby. I want that laugh. Whatever that thing was that says life is bad, what a gas. I want that. I want that. I could smell the smoke, and I kind of walked up, and the door was open. It was a long-ass old hall, and there was a guy way to the back, and when I stood at that door, it was all smoky. You could hardly see, but he saw me, and he looked at me, and he smiled. It was eyeball to eyeball, man, eyeball to eyeball. He smiled, and he came at me with his arms out. Now, back in those days, you come at me with your arms out, it's either fighting or fornicating, but I didn't move. I stood right there. I said, I'm not, this is it. This is it. And he came up. He held out his hand. I held out my left. My right was too broken. I held out my left hand, and he took it, and he shook it. And I wanted him to know who I was. I said, I'm alcoholic. He looked at me and said, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. He said, come on in this house. That's what they say in AA, come on in this house. Even if they don't know you, come on in this house. But I told him, I said, I'm trouble. There's people looking for me. He said, yeah, yeah, you are. And yeah, they are. A couple of them inside here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are my people. I love these people. I stood at sat at this table, and they came around the table, and they came to me. I said, I'm John Henry, I'm alcoholic. And they said, come on in this house. These are my people. Up there. They haven't got them here. Hey, they got them. I looked up there. You know what those things are? Those are window shades. They are. They're everywhere. They're window shades. Some old wino bought himself $1 million worth of window shades, didn't know what to do with them. So, isn't that right? I think that's how that happened. That's how I'd have done it. Woke up out of a blackout and he said, I bought $1 million worth of what? Window shades. Shit, I gotta quit drinking. What am I gonna do with these window shades? Midway powerless over alcohol. Oh, cool. And you got traditions too. That's two for one. I can sell these damn things to the clubs. Yeah. I bet that happened that way. I looked up there and said, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. When I read that word, it wasn't wasted on me. God, that told me a lot about me. I'm powerless. No argument there. None. I know what they're talking. I know what they're talking about. You put something in front of me, it gets me high. Get your hands off that. Yeah, I'm powerless. Then there was a hyphen. And I read it this way. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives are unmanageable. That's not what it says. That's how I read it. And then I thought, no. It came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I thought, I wonder if that's neurosis or that's psychosis. And then the number three is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care. Ooh! I didn't believe in God. No, I didn't believe in God. I didn't like people who believed in God. Uh-uh. No way. So I went on. Made a searching and fearless something. Then admitted to, ooh. And Tyler Redhap, ooh. Humbly asked him to what? And then it said, made a list of all persons we had harmed. And when I read that, I said, no damn way. I had sold a batch of bad drugs to a bunch of bad people. I wasn't going back and saying, I'm sorry. But I thought, yeah, man, I sure hope they let me hang around. You know, I mean, I got some problems here, but not nearly. Oh, I went up to a man that day. There were a bunch of guys sitting by the coffee pot, you know, and so they must know what they're doing. So I went over to them. I said, hey, what's the deal here? And this guy looks at me and says, you mean, what's the deal here? I said, yeah, what's the deal here? He said, well, we don't drink. I said, well, how the hell do you not drink? He said, one day at a time. I said, that's it? He said, well, for you, yeah. That's a deal. I said, well, I don't believe in God. And he said, well, obviously he believes in you. What the hell do you do with that? They won't even kick you out of this place, man. You know what? If you don't like the third step, go on over the third tradition. What's that say? The only requirement?
For AA membership is a desire to stop.
Only requirement for AA membership is what?
Desire to stop drinking.
Bingo. You are a member. I am a member. But I don't like that three. Well, then pick that three, for God's sakes. Yeah. I'm a member. Same membership you got. Sobriety all day. You want to not drink today? Come on. Let's do this thing. One day. That's it. What's the deal here? We don't drink. How do you not drink? One day at a time. Bingo. That's it. Welcome. Come on in this house. You can laugh with the rest of us. You're a member just the same. That's it. That's it. Chris, when I get to about 5 minutes of this thing, give me one of these, would you? I might ignore you, but you know the drill. Yeah, you My sponsor, old man named Frank R. said it this way, every tin horn drunk, every new drunk is afforded a free ride, but then there comes a payday. I got my free ride. You hear about the pink cloud out there, don't you? If you're on it, stay on it. Get it. Grab it. Hug it. It's yours. Get it. Take it. Every tin horn drunk is afforded a free ride, he said, but then there comes a payday. In the big book, it says it like this. We are driven by 100 forms of fear. We are driven by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, self-delusion, self-pity, self-delusion, self-pity, self-seeking. What about me? What about me? What about me? What about me? Self-seeking, self-seeking. I'm so big, I deserve more, self-delusion. I'll never get enough, self-pity. But what about me? Self-seeking. I'm so big, I deserve more, self-delusion. But I'll never get enough, self-pity. What about me? What about me? What about me? That's how I'm driven. That's how I'm driven. I wake up every morning thinking, what about me? How am I going to get more? My head's going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I hadn't had a drink in about 2.5 years. Let's talk about reservations, okay? They talk about resentments all the time around here, but reservations go like this. If things get real bad, I just might get a little. If things get real bad, I might snort a, okay? It's a reservation. It says if my wife leaves or she doesn't come back or I lose my job, whatever. We tuck that reservation way, way, way under our collar and don't tell nobody about it. And you know what it's going to do? It's going to come to pass. I guarantee them to you. Because I said, I can't take any amphetamines. I can't be drinking no wine. I can't smoke no reefer. But if things get real bad, I might just snort me some organic cocaine. No meth. No. Organic cocaine. It's got to be brown. And I took that reservation. I stuck it in here. Said, you an AA member? You bet. You reading the book? Uh-huh. You reading the steps? You bet. You going to meetings? Uh-huh. Well, sort of, kind of, maybe. Have you got a sponsor? Two and a half years in this program, I was sitting in a nightclub with John Hammond, a bunch of other cats, and my manager had just sold a whole bunch of acreage that had a whole bunch of pot on it. There's all kinds of money floating around this place. There's all these Hollywood people. Everybody's good, I'm bad. Everybody's somebody, I'm nobody. It says in the 12 and 12, alcoholics suffer from a terrible sense of isolation. We are actors. We pretend we're one thing to the people, but we're another thing and we know it. We're no damn good. I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief. And I'm pretending I'm not. What about me? 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 What about? I am so isolated. In the middle of a crowd of people that love me, I am totally different than all of you. All of you. There's only one way to make that head prattle stop. It's either meditation or medication. I looked to my right, and some guy had a pile of what? Cocaine. What color? Thank you. Any questions? No. Oftentimes, I'll find somebody with a watch. Everybody's got these little pads now. I'll find somebody with a watch, and I'll say, get your watch out. I want you to time this. Give me that big book. It says in here, it really does. It is a fact that most winos, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Without defense against the first drink. I'm totally without power. Without power. Time this. I've been to AA. I love AA. I like not drinking. I sleep inside when I'm not drinking. No, I do. long, hot showers. Yes. I mean it. Driving a car. Yes. With a license. Yeah. Came on down. I've been a runner all my life. I mean, the act folded, and I grabbed my guitar and a waitress. and told her about this gig I had lined up in Fairbanks, Alaska. And we left from and a mandolin player and his dog and his cat, his banjo, his mandolin, his guitar, my guitar, all my clothes. Stuffed him in a 1968 Corvair Monza. you line up about three of those chairs. That's about the size of that goddamn car. We took off from, we were in Westport, Connecticut, and I told him there was a gig I had up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and the car broke down in Austin, Texas. At the 24-Hour Club, 503 West Old Tour Street, 24-Hour Club of Alcoholics Anonymous. An old man sitting in the back named Frank Roberts. Two old men. Vic Thompson was one of them. Frank Roberts was the other. I buried him. Frank was my sponsor for over 32 years. But I knew I was that, I mean, I'd... Like that, okay? So there's something happening here, and I'm in trouble. And I don't want to be on the streets. And he said, I knew the deal. I knew what I had not done in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I read the book. I thought I'd taken the steps. I thought I'd done the deal. But I hadn't asked another man for help. The kind that sit in the back and don't laugh when I tell a joke. One of them scary old men. And I knew what I had to do was ask him for help, and I did. And he said, pick up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, read three pages, and call me on the phone. I did not do that after 3-4 weeks. Yeah, that book. Anybody else got a new book that had been written in? Anyway, after about 3-4 weeks, I called him on the phone for help. I needed a new job, or I needed a new car, I needed some new bullshit. He said, what page you on? And I said, well, I need a new car, I need a new job, I need a new... He said, what page you on? I said, well, I needed... Hung up the phone. I called him back 2 or 3 times. I finally decided I'd read something in that damn book. I read Bill's story or some shit. And he said, what page are you on? I said, oh, I'm on the first page. Oh, what page are you on? I'm on the first page. What's it say? So that's Bill's story. He said, no, what's it say on the first page? I said, well, it's Bill's story. He said, turn to the first page, damn it. And I picked up that book and I turned to the very first page. There's nothing on the first page of the hardcover of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's something on his page. All his girlfriends and shit. And the second page. But there was nothing on that first page. I said, there's nothing on the first page. He said, turn the page. I turned the page. I said, there's nothing on the second page. He said, now you're on to something. What's it say on the third page? I said, Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, congratulations. He hung up the phone. But I realized that's what he'd asked me to do, and I hadn't done it. You know what I mean? That's what he'd asked me to do, and I hadn't done it. So I read 3 more pages, and out of that three, the 2 out of that 3, it says Alcoholics Anonymous. There it is. How 1,000 men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And I thought, recovered? They got that wrong. It's recovering. They got it wrong. The book's wrong. So I called up this man on the phone. I said, I got a part here they messed up. We need to talk about this. And he said, what page? I told him it was page 5. So what does it say? It says recovered. They mean recovering. They're wrong. He said, now we got something to talk about. And we entered into a relationship, this man and me, that had to do with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, well, I don't believe in God. He said, we're not talking about God. Read the damn book. So I read the book. And in chapter 4, the first four chapters are the first two steps. Chapter 4, it says, when we became alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could no longer postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. Either he is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? And that old man said, hurry up, I haven't got much time. I said, well, I don't understand what they're talking about. He said, well, have you ever had a compulsion to drink? I mean, a place in your gut of guts that says, I must drink now? I said, yes, sir, I have. He said, where did that go? I realized I hadn't had a drink of booze in 3 years, a little over 3 years at the time. And I was awestruck. I said, I don't know where it went. He said, well, that's step two. Now step three. The first requirement to step three is to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. It doesn't say you got to believe in God. It says you got to be convinced that a life run on self-will cannot be a success. We have to find some other will that works. If it's not our will, whose will is it? Well, either God is everything or else he is nothing. Either he is or he isn't. Pick one. Either he's bad or he's good. Pick one. I said, well, he's good. He said, oh, so either God is everything or he's nothing. He's everything. He's good. Then everything is good, right? I said, yeah. Ooh, I stepped in it. Because from that point on, no matter what happened in my life, when I called him up, I said, the car broke down. He'd say, good. At one point, I called him up and said, my wife has a boyfriend. He said, good. I said, no, not this time. No, my wife has a boyfriend, and they want the house. He said, well, that's good. Yeah, they'll need one. I said, oh, man, you're not listening to me. My wife has a boyfriend. They want the house, and she wants me to pay them alimony. He said, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, good. Then he pointed that place in the book that you'll get to if you take the steps. Because it's on page 133. It's family afterwards. Steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 are in the chapters before this part where it says we absolutely insist on enjoying life. Why? Because if the newcomer could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. When I walked up those stairs, what did I hear? Laughter. Yeah. That's what drew me to AA. God, I want to laugh. I want to laugh like they're laughing. Not the kind of laugh. I had been hysterical plenty. You eat enough amphetamines, you smoke enough reefer, you're going to laugh at something. But that's not the deal. They had this was different. This was the real deal. I wanted that. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. The newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence. They wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We're sure that God intends for us to be happy. We can no longer ascribe to the fact that life is a veil of tears, though it was once that for many of us. It's clear to us now we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, my wife introduced me to her boyfriend. But if trouble comes, yeah, they want the house. But if trouble comes, they want me to pay them so they don't have to work. If trouble comes, capitalize upon it cheerfully as a sign of God's omnipotence. Say it's good. Thank you.